minutes ago. Looking real good in my passport photo.
Amateur Traveler, episode 232. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about island churches, Venetian walled cities, and fjords as we go to Montenegro. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. I have two news stories for you. The first one is a very somber one with a little bit of a silver lining, and that is obviously the plane that went down in Libya this week. And yet the one silver lining there is that out of 104 people on the plane, there was one boy who made it, who survived, who had serious leg injuries but seems to be doing okay, a Dutch boy. Unfortunately, his whole family was on the plane. So my thoughts go out to Holland, which is reeling under that, as well as everyone else who suffered some loss in that particular crash. And they still don't really know what happened. It doesn't seem to be at all related to the ash cloud, for instance, which has been, again, grounding flights over Europe. And then I'm afraid my second news story is also a sad but strange story, and that is a couple was trying to bring back a dog from Mexico, and they were on Delta Airlines, and the dog did not arrive. And at first Delta said, well, the dog is fine, he's being cared for, he'll be on a later flight. And later they found out, no, the dog had escaped from his carrier, he's not coming home. And apparently they paid $200 because that's what you would pay for lost luggage. So they considered the dog a piece of lost luggage, which has caused a little bit of a uproar, as you might imagine. For links to both of those stories, check out the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. I'd like to welcome back on the show Ralph Velasco, who's come to talk to us this time about Montenegro. Ralph, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Chris. Great to be here.
And for those of you who don't remember, Ralph was on previously talking about travel photography. So if you're interested in travel photography, Ralph is a photographer, and you can check that out. Or you can travel with Ralph and I, because Ralph is the person that I'm doing the November photography tour of Egypt with. And I don't know about you, Ralph, but I am particularly looking forward to that.
Oh, I can't tell you how excited I am. Very, very excited.
But let's talk Montenegro. First of all, where is Montenegro? Can you put it on the map for us?
Sure. Montenegro is one of the former Yugoslav republics, I believe, but it's right by Serbia and Croatia, across the Adriatic Sea from Italy.
Okay. And why should someone go to Montenegro?
I wasn't sure at first, because it was really just a stepping stone on our way from Belgrade, Serbia to Dubrovnik. Mm-hmm. And so looking at the map, I said, boy, there's this country there, Montenegro, which I'd heard of before but didn't really know anything about when we were planning the trip. And it made sense to fly from Belgrade to Tivat, which is just outside of Kotor. And so we stopped there, and we were absolutely blown away by the beauty of it and the people, the architecture, food. It was just all around a really wonderful place to visit.
Okay. Now, we're talking a fairly small country, as you said, part of what used to be Yugoslavia. Do you have a recommended itinerary for seeing Montenegro?
Well, we, as I mentioned, flew directly into Tivat from Belgrade. Now, we spent all of our time on the coast, which to me was a wonderful thing to do. We were there for 4 or 5 days, based ourselves in Kotor. Mm-hmm. And then it's such a small country, as you mentioned, it's about the size of Connecticut. And so there's a lot of very close day trips that you can do right from Kotor. And so Perast is a city that's maybe 15 or 20 minutes up the coast. There's also Budva, which is maybe 45 minutes to an hour down the coast or south. And a lot of other cities, Sveti Stefan, Herceg Novi. A lot of wonderful, what I believe are former Venetian settlements.
Okay, like Dubrovnik then.
Exactly, and they're all little walled cities that were their own entities for hundreds of years, and now they're just connected by very nice roads, very easy to get around.
How much tourism does Montenegro get? Was it a very popular destination, and I'm just the last one who's been there, or?
No, I don't think so. We, like I said, I hadn't really heard much about it, but it just broke off from Serbia back in, I believe, 2007. And at the time we were there in October 2007, it was the world's newest country. If I've got my facts correct, I believe Kosovo is now the world's newest country, another country breaking away from Serbia. It's really been on the map of Europeans for quite some time, but I think Americans are just checking it out. And now that they're on the euro and part of the European Union, I suppose it's a little bit easier to get into.
Okay. So. And so you mentioned a couple different cities there on the coast. And which city would you go to first, and what would you see in that city?
You know, Perast is right up the road, maybe 15 or 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. And we went there a couple times during our visit. Unfortunately, it had rained both times. It is a rather rainy country, at least in October when we were there. But to me, as you probably know from our previous episode on travel photography, I actually like inclement weather as to how it adds to photography, because everyone's out there shooting a place in the beautiful weather. But when you're out there and it's a little bit rainy or snowy or whatever it might be, you can really get some different types of photographs. Mm-hmm. So our time in Perast was absolutely wonderful. There's two island churches right off the coast there. That one is a man-made island and the other is a natural island, but there's a church on each one. And I can provide some pictures of those later for the show. But it's a really neat, very, very small little town, very walkable, really nice people, and easy to get to. So Perast was a place that I would definitely go back to when I go back.
Okay. So old Venetian town, walled city, two churches and islands. Anything else that really surprised you about Perast?
It is a very small town. I don't know that it's a walled city itself, but okay. Kotor is, and so are Budva. But I don't think, if I recall, that Perast is actually a walled city. But it's a small settlement on a little peninsula outcropping that has these wonderful churches off the shore and is surrounded by mountains. Just to mention for your listeners, Kotor, sort of the main city in this area, is right at the end of the Bay of Kotor, which I believe is technically considered a fjord and the southernmost fjord in Europe. So You can imagine these sheer cliff walls all around, reminding you a lot of Scandinavian countries, but with that sort of Adriatic feel.
And you mentioned mountains all around. I've always gotten the impression from the name of the country that we're talking about a mountainous country.
Absolutely. There's mountains all over this area. It's my understanding that there are some flatlands inland, but we didn't get to those. And my preference is to be in more mountainous, coastal-type towns anyway, but it's my understanding that the inland is a wonderful place, too. There's a lot of action sports, river rafting, fishing, a lot of outdoor activities, biking, hiking. So it's a really active-type country.
Interesting. And where else should we go?
Well, Budva is another town that's just a little bit south of Kotor, and it is a walled city. All of these walled cities are really just pedestrian zones, so there's no cars allowed. And you can see why, because some of the streets, if you can call them that, aren't barely wide enough for a horse and buggy to get through. But there's little shops and restaurants, and the food there is very Italian. It's got It's a lot of pizzas, pasta, grilled seafood. Grilled squid is one of my favorite foods in the world, and they're masters at it. Just a little bit of olive oil and sea salt. My mouth is watering right now. Very good beer, and just really quaint little towns with wonderful people, good shopping. And the fact that they're on the euro does make it a bit easier. You're not having to change money and things like that.
Mm-hmm. And did you stay in any place that is remarkable or memorable?
Absolutely did. I stayed in a place called the Palazzo Radomiri, which is right on the water just outside of Kotor in a settlement called Dobrota, Dobrota. And it was a former, quote, palace. It wasn't that large. It was like a very large home that they've converted into a wonderful boutique hotel. It's right on the water. Seems like every room had an ocean views. Ours certainly did. I can certainly provide some pictures of that, but the rooms were looking right out onto the fjord. Just fabulous. A really, really wonderful place. Very reasonable for what we got. and just outside of KOTOR. So it was a quick cab ride into town. You could walk it, but it was probably 2 or 3 miles just out of town. But I would highly recommend this hotel.
And how did you get around? You talked about cab rides. Did you get around by cabs? Did you rent a car?
We didn't rent a car. The first day we got there, we ran into a British couple at the hotel that we were staying at. So were they. We met at breakfast, and they had rented a car. So they took us into town. They had been there a few days. They'd been to Montenegro before. He was actually buying some real estate there. He had bought a couple condos and was going to rent them out. That's sort of the new thing to do. Montenegro, there's a lot of foreign people coming in to purchase up some abandoned homes, and they're converting them into boutique hotels like the Palazzo Radamiri. Hmm. So he took us around a little bit. That was a really good introduction to the town. But we also got around by cabs, and cabs are a very inexpensive way to get around. For me, I try to avoid renting cars, especially in Europe, because it is so difficult to park often. And yeah, and
they I thought you were going to say to drive, and I was going to take exception with that, but I'm with you with the parking. Okay.
Yeah, no, not to drive, to park. I always try to avoid that, and I think that you're just much more mobile and when you can just call a cab very quickly. So we took cabs everywhere, except for when this couple drove us around a little bit. And we actually even took a cab from KOTOR all the way over the Croatian border into Dubrovnik. And that was about a 2-hour drive.
And how long does a cab drive in that area cost for 2 hours?
It was $100 for a 2-hour cab ride. So very inexpensive. And he had to drive all the way back as well. So it was well worth it for us to pay that. Now, there are buses, from what I understand, that we could have taken, but certainly a cab's better for our situation at the time. We had no problem taking a cab. It was wonderful.
Okay, interesting. Now, were you using any sort of guidebooks to orient yourself for the country?
Yes, we at the time had used the Lonely Planet Eastern Europe guidebook. Mm-hmm. And there's a small section on Montenegro in it, and that's where we got a lot of our information. I also understand that Brat also has a book, and I believe it's specific to Montenegro. And I'm sure there's other ones that have popped up in the past 3 years since we've been there.
And how would you critique what they were sending you to? Was there anything that you thought was not a good use of time or things that they missed?
I don't remember if they had recommended Perast, but that was sort of something that this British couple took us to, and we really enjoyed that. What they did tell us about was the famous KOTOR Fortress hike, which is a 1,350-step hike above the old town. Hmm. I would highly recommend it. It's one of those things you absolutely have to do when you're in KOTOR. It's not super rigorous. 1,350 steps is a lot of steps. It's a lot of uphill. Mm-hmm. But talk about a payoff. When you get to the top, you are, I don't know how many thousands of feet above the fjord, above the old town, looking at this incredible view. And all the way, you're walking up these steps that are just worn down from hundreds and hundreds of years of who knows who walking up and down them. Hmm. For centuries. And at one point, as I mentioned, Montenegro is a bit of a rainy country, at least in October when we were there. And it rained on us during the walk up. But as fate would have it, we came upon an abandoned church right then as it started to rain. We just hung out in this little abandoned church for about 45 minutes until the rain subsided. And to me, it was just one of those great travel moments. Could never plan for it. Starts raining, and all of a sudden, there's this abandoned church that you can hang out at. It was absolutely fabulous. So you have to do that hike. There is a charge. I believe at the time, it was €2. So not expensive at all, but certainly helped to maintain it.
What was the best day you had there?
I would have to say the day of the hike. It was my girlfriend's birthday that day, and we decided that we were going to go up. I think we were there for 4 days, 3 nights, and we knew we were going to get to the hike, and we kind of left it to the last full day. It happened to be her birthday, and we just had a fabulous time, and we brought a little bit of food, some water, but a big payoff too was after, I don't know, I would say it was about a 4-hour round trip, and we definitely took our time. When we got back down into the old town, we stopped at our favorite pizza place, had these wonderful personal pizzas, huge personal pizza and the great Montenegrin beer. And that was an incredible payoff, too, after this, not grueling, but a little bit of athletic hike that we took. It was wonderful.
And the language there, Serbian is the predominant language, if I'm not mistaken, there. Did you have any trouble getting around? I'm assuming you don't speak Serbo-Croatian.
I don't. Yeah, it's my understanding that during the Yugoslav days, it was known as Serbo-Croatian, then Serbian, and now it's just considered Montenegrin.
But okay.
No. So I'm not sure what the difference is. I think it's the same language, just a different name for it. But no, I absolutely don't speak any Montenegrin. But the people there spoke quite a bit of English. So I never considered language a barrier at any point.
Okay. One warning you would give.
Prepare for weather. As I mentioned, it's a rather rainy country. It could be quite warm during the daytime and when the sun peaked out, and then it might change quite a bit. So I guess you could consider it the Chicago of Eastern Europe. You know, if you don't like the weather, wait 5 minutes. So be prepared. And I'm all about layering and just being able to peel stuff on and off so that I'm comfortable in any kind of weather. It was never an issue, but that is something that I would warn people about.
Okay. And it didn't sound like you knew a lot going to the country. So what do you wish you had known?
Boy, I wish I had known how beautiful it was, just so then we could have planned to stay longer.
Okay.
Because there is so much to see, so many other little towns that we would have liked to have visited, other things we would have liked to do. But I'm very grateful for the amount of time we did have there. As I mentioned, we had 4 days and three nights, so that's a pretty good amount of time. But I could spend a month there easily.
And you mentioned meeting the British couple. How about locals? Who's the most memorable local you met?
One person that really had an impression on me was I would always get out early and shoot. As a photographer, I'm all about the light. Mm-hmm. So I would get out there at, I don't know, maybe 6:30, 7 o'clock in the morning. And especially in this area of Dobrota that we were staying in, there was hardly any tourists at all. Maybe just the people staying in our small, like 10-room boutique hotel, but all around it were just local homes. And so I would walk up and down the fjord shooting away, getting a really nice light until about 8, 9 o'clock, come back to the hotel for breakfast and then head out for the rest of the day. And so I was walking back up the fjord and there was this gentleman, an older gentleman, sitting on a little stool or whatever it was at the end of this one pier. And he had a cane, and he was just enjoying the view. And I could tell that he was a local. I walked by, and we just kind of had this moment. I didn't talk to him because I would be surprised if he did speak English. But we just kind of had this little traveler moment where I smiled at him. He smiled back. I lifted my camera up and asked if I could take a couple shots, and he kind of shrugged yes. I took some shots of them, and it was just one of those travel moments that I enjoy and was just kind of between he and I, and then I went on my way.
Okay. Anything else as we start to wind this down that you would recommend? When you're in Montenegro, don't forget to what?
When you're in Montenegro, don't forget to walk around the old towns and just get lost in the little alleyways and there's lots of shops, these converted buildings from the 15th and 16th century that have been converted from what were probably formerly homes or ancient shops that now are modern with, of course, electricity, but they're selling whether it's clothing or food or whatever the product might be. But getting lost in these little old towns is really easy to do, but you're never really lost because they're so small. That's where the travel opportunity lies, is finding the little nooks and crannies of these towns. So explore.
Okay. How would you finish this sentence? You really know you're in Montenegro when what?
When you have a beautiful vista of the fjord there by Kotor or Perast, and you've got these sheer mountains all around you, beautiful flat Adriatic Sea, in the Bay of Kotor, you definitely know you're in Montenegro.
Best money-saving tip for Montenegro?
I think a money-saving tip for me was just taking cabs and not being committed to having a car that you feel like you need to use to get your money's worth. Every now and then that we needed to get around, we hopped in a very inexpensive cab. It took us to where we wanted to go. We did what we wanted to do, and they were plentiful everywhere we wanted to go, even a two-hour cab ride to Dubrovnik. So my idea is to not bother with renting a car and just take local cabs.
Okay. And if you had to summarize Montenegro in three words, what three words would you use?
A photographer's paradise.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, thanks so much for coming back on the show, Ralph, and talking to us about Montenegro. And obviously, I'm looking forward to traveling with you. I don't know for sure that I'll be getting up quite as early as you will in Egypt there. We'll have to see what that's like.
Okay, I'll be knocking on your door, waking you up early.
And thanks so much for coming on the show.
My pleasure. Thank you.
I'm going to skip the internet resource for today and end this show a little more quickly than usual. I'm down in Southern California for my son's graduation from college, and I want to spend time celebrating that instead of doing the recording for the show today. I do want to remind people that we are doing a travel contest. Again, Ralph is the judge for that, and you can enter that by going to the Facebook fan page. That's facebook.com/amateur traveler. And if you go there, you need to become a fan, or you need to like the page is the new terminology for that. And then you should be able to post to the wall and attach a photo. And the theme for the May photo contest is sense of scale. And I think one of the good examples right now is someone who posted a picture of Petra, the city carved into the stone in Jordan, and then they had people in the foreground, so we got to know just how large that is. And actually, it was a surprise to me. I didn't realize it was as large as it is. And then I do want to encourage you, since we had Ralph on the show today, to sign up for the Egypt Photo Tour, where Ralph and I will both be on that, and you can find the details for that at amateurtraveler.com/tours. And the other thing that I haven't mentioned recently is it's helpful, if you have not already done so, to go and review the show, assuming you like it, at iTunes, because that's actually the best source I have of new listeners, is people who see the show because it stays featured because it has good reviews. And I thank all of you who've reviewed it in the past, because that's one of the reasons it does show there. I had some meetups coming up, or the possibility of meetups here over the next couple months, so I again would encourage people to subscribe to the newsletter. I was looking to see if anybody wanted to do a meetup in Los Angeles. Didn't hear back from anybody, so that didn't happen. If you live in Los Angeles and you're now thinking, oh gee, I wish I had known, that's what the newsletter's for, or following me on Twitter at Chris2X. Or again, I will always post those at the discussion boards, amateurtraveler.com/boards. And I do want to encourage you to check out that offer for a free audiobook from audible.com, amateurtraveler.com/freebook. I listened on the way down to Los Angeles to a book that I really enjoyed. Actually, I listened to two books. One was a book about Shackleton and the exploration of the southern continent and that expedition, shipwrecked at the bottom of the world. And the other one was The Last Lecture. And The Last Lecture is a wonderful book about a Carnegie Mellon professor who wrote it basically for his kids, because he knew he had terminal cancer. I wouldn't recommend actually doing what I did, which is listening to that book while you're trying to drive. With that, we're going to end this episode of The Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, feel free to send me an email at host@amateurtraveler.com. Follow me on Twitter, Chris2X, or just post your comment at amateurtraveler.com. And as always, thanks so much for listening. Cathedral.